Hey, it's episode 424 of the 343 podcast. Today is about me responding to Landon Donovan's recent comments. Yes, people have been asking, Gary, what do you think about what he's been talking about the past 10 days or 2 weeks or whenever it is that he launched his marketing campaign for his book? He has been pointing the finger at the youth over and over again, and that is extremely problematic. You know, if I grab a, bring together a whole bunch of former professional soccer players here in the United States, American soccer players, I bet you over half of them would think that they know more about youth coaching than the youth coaches in this country, which is mind-boggling to me. And Landon is no exception. He retires, he does some media stuff, he coached in the USL maybe a year or two, and now he's an expert at youth soccer. What is wrong with youth soccer and that youth soccer is the problem? He is completely ignorant, completely wrong, and in this episode, I go on long explanations, long rants, if you will, but rants that are very truthful. It's not just me rambling on and on about why he is wrong, why he believes the things that he believes, and why, if you are a parent of a player, you are going to enter into a huge pitfall for your kid if you happen to follow along with what he is saying. Same with coaches. If you start saying, oh, wow, well, but it's Landon Donovan who's saying this stuff, I should follow Landon's thought process, you're going to be in a hell of a hurt with developing as a coach, with developing your teams and your players. And coaches, speaking of developing yourself and your teams and your players, you want to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. I strongly encourage you, I implore you that if you've been following us for any extended period of time and you've gotten to know, like, and trust what it is that we have been saying because we have eaten our own dog food. Yes, for over 20 years, we have coached at every single level in the youth soccer landscape here in the United States. We've done unprecedented work. I mean unprecedented. You should join the premium program. Again, you can find that at 343coaching.com. And parents, you need to be an excellent mentor to your kid. And for that, we've codified our decades worth of experience in this unique landscape that is America at 343masterclass.com. And if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, I hope you enjoy this episode. It's a doozy. Here we go.
All right, Gary, let's hop straight into it today. Before we get to the actual topic of the episode, and even though it ties in, I just opened up Twitter right before logging on, Gary, and I saw your tweet, or should I call it X now? But you said, I'm tempted to respond to Landon Donovan's comments. So we're here, Gary. Everybody commented, do it. So you might as well, Gary.
Well, he said a whole bunch of comments over the past week, and I don't know them all off the top of my head, and I don't even want to click on the little video clips that he has with Tim Howard and their podcast because I just want to throw up with these people. I can't tolerate it. It just sends chills down my spine. But I was mostly referencing his comments on youth and how they are targeting the youth and blaming the youth system and the youth coaches and the youth, everything youth, that is the problem when it's not. The problem is MLS, and the problem comes from the top. And what really pissed me off was his specific quote about him saying, can you believe that, you know, if I go anywhere in America, over half of the youth coaches will think that they know more about soccer than I do. That's Landon Donovan's quote, essentially. And I'm like, what an arrogant piece of trash this guy is. And ignorant also, because first off, the framing is totally incorrect. It's not that the youth coaches will think that they know more about soccer, period, right? Soccer in general than Landon. No, it's that they'll probably, I'll agree with Landon, that they'll probably believe that they know more about youth coaching than Landon in general. I would 100% agree with those youth coaches that have 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years of experience that they 1,000,000% know a hell of a lot more about youth coaching than Landon Donovan and youth soccer development than Landon Donovan and the youth soccer ecosystem than Landon Donovan and the incentives in the system than Landon Donovan and youth clubs and Landon Donovan. Everything surrounding youth, they know way more than Landon Donovan, who was just a soccer player, an employee kicking a ball, working for whatever club he happened to be with. And now he left, he's retired. He got a little bit of coaching experience with USL with the San Diego Loyal. I believe maybe it was a couple of seasons, but as far as I'm aware, he's never coached youth soccer in his life. And even if he has coached some youth soccer team in his life, how long has he done it? Maybe a year, 2 years? I don't think he has done anything at all, but I'm just giving benefit of the doubt. Let's say he coached a youth soccer team for 1 or 2 years. You don't know shit about youth soccer. You have never managed the families. You have never managed the kids. You don't have experience across both genders. You don't have experience across all the age groups. You don't have experience across all the levels of youth soccer. You don't have experience dealing with boards of directors of youth clubs who could be parents, could not be parents. You have no experience with field availability. You have no experience with nothing. You don't understand the pressures to win. You don't know where the pressures to win actually come from. You don't know what those incentives drive youth coaches to do and what it drives youth coaches not to do. You have no experience with having the budget of a youth soccer coach or the salary or the wages of a youth soccer coach and trying to make ends meet. So you have no idea of how to walk in their shoes and how that impacts everything. Absolutely ignorant commentary by the guy. And what's worse, Benny, is that because he was a professional soccer player and one of the best to do it for the United States, he intrinsically has a platform, and intrinsically, because of that credentialism, has credibility with the general fan base or the general media, who will just believe the bullshit that this guy says. Worse than that still is that, or as a consequence of that, his commentary helps to uphold the monopoly, helps to uphold the actual root of the problem, which is a closed ecosystem at the professional level. How so? Because this is what that establishment has been doing all along, is you divert attention from the root problem, which is them, okay? And they point the finger elsewhere, specifically the youth. That's where they point the finger. And so they come up with all these rational explanations as to why the youth is the root cause of everything. And on the surface, it's rational. And people who don't know any better, who don't have all the experience that I just ranted about, they don't know any better. And so it just makes sense to them. It seems logical sense. Oh, yeah, I guess the youth is the problem. Or parents who don't know any better, whose pocketbook is being impacted because they have to pay $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 a year for their kid to play soccer at a significant level. They're pissed off about the system, obviously, because their pocketbook is being burned a hole into. So when they hear Landon Donovan rant on the youth or blame the youth system and youth coaches and youth everything, the parents like, yeah, fuck the youth coaches, fuck the clubs. Yeah, Landon, that's right. Thank God, join into the party and blaming the youth. All the while it serves to uphold the monopoly, the establishment, the corruption, the root cause of the problem, which is MLS. That's the response.
There's a lot that I want to follow up with, Gary, but I think a big problem that many people need to understand is, and I'll give it the example of myself, Gary. I was born in 96. Okay, so I'm 30 years old. So growing up, I was in that environment of Landon Donovan is the best. And I'm from Southern California, right? So Galaxy is my home team, and I would go to the games and I kind of like idolized Donovan. I was like, man, this guy's the best on the team. Like, I love this. This guy was like my hero. Okay. Now, obviously, I met you. I met Brian when I was a kid. I've been working with you guys. So my eyes were kind of opened up as to what the real root or the issue or the problem is. However, I'm thinking about people that are my age that grew up during that time frame and haven't been exposed to what I've been exposed. And so now, people that are my age or maybe even a little bit older, they hear Donovan coming out and saying that. And it's like, oh, wow, this is Landon Donovan. This guy was the best player in the Galaxy, the best men's national team player that this country has ever seen. So I probably should be listening to him. And I think a lot of people fall into that trap of they idolized him as a kid. Now they're older. And it's like, okay, whatever this guy is saying must be true. So Donovan is saying that the youth is the issue. Well, I'm going to start pointing the blame and point the finger at the youth as well. So I think a lot of people are falling into that trap, Gary.
Yeah. that's, where do I take it from there? I think a huge part of the problem is that we as humans are very limited in our cognitive capacity to become competent, let alone experts, in any field whatsoever. It's very difficult to become subject matter experts. And so when you're not a subject matter expert, what do you rely on? You rely on credentials, you rely on pedigree, you rely on social consensus, you rely on the power brokers, you rely on the media, you rely on external information to kind of guide you and tell you how the world is in these fields that you know nothing about. So if you want to educate, you just had a kid, you want to educate yourself on, should I vaccinate my kid? What baby crib should I get? You know, everything associated with raising a child. You're not an expert at raising a child. You've never done it before. So how do you make decisions? You kind of try to figure out, you know, who has the credentials to tell me what to believe. And you have no capacity to judge whether the credentialed person actually knows what they're doing versus somebody else. You don't know. You don't know. But what else are you going to do? You have no choice but to kind of say, well, I mean, F it. You know, that's a doctor that has an MD and they're telling me to do this. So, I mean, what else am I going to do? Am I going to believe my aunt, you know, who has been working in human resources for, you know, a retailer? Who am I going to believe, the MD or my aunt? You believe the MD. So the same thing applies here. People who don't know dick about soccer, they have no capacity for discernment. So if Landon comes along and says X, Y, or Z, well, I mean, I guess Landon knows more than I do, so I'm going to believe Landon.
Yeah. I've asked you this off air, Gary, but I think it would be good to bring it up right now. Do you think that Landon truly believes that the youth soccer system is the real problem in this country? And he believes that he's coming out and doing the right thing and calling it out? Or do you think he actually knows, like, hey, maybe we should have an open system here in the US, but of course he can't come out and say that, right? He can't come out and attack the system that basically employs him. So do you think he's genuine, Gary?
I would say 80% to 90% genuine. He believes what he's saying. 80 to 90%. I think it's very hard for folks to admit that they aren't experts in something that they've been around in their whole life. What they fail to recognize is that any domain, in this particular case, soccer, has all kinds of subdomains. Nobody is an expert in all things soccer. Pep Guardiola is not an expert in all things soccer. What is all things soccer? Well, there's coaching a professional team. There's been an assistant coach to a professional team. Pep is already not an expert in being an assistant coach. I can tell you that much. He actually doesn't walk the shoes of an assistant coach. He doesn't know all the details, the intricacies, the relationship dynamics. He has an idea, don't get me wrong, because he works with assistant coaches for years and years and years, but he's not a true expert like a assistant coach who's been an assistant coach for 20 years is an expert. Now branch out from there. Then there's youth coaching. Then there's youth assistant coaching. Then there's youth club management, whether it be the general manager of a youth club, whether it be a board member of a youth club, whether it be a DOC or a technical director of a youth club. And all those positions also exist at a professional level. Every single one of those positions has expertise and skill set associated with it. So just because you played professional soccer, right, doesn't mean that you have expertise in all the things that are involved in soccer. Does that make sense? Landon Donovan wasn't an agent. Landon Donovan hasn't started a company from scratch, as far as I know, in the soccer world. What does he know about that? Has Landon Donovan negotiated countless contracts as a business owner or a business operator in the soccer ecosystem? I don't know. But you see, there's dozens and dozens of different fields within the domain. And just because you are great in one domain, in his particular case, he was the kicker of soccer balls, right? He was very good at kicking a soccer ball, doesn't mean that he has expertise in all of these other things.
Gotcha,
so,
Gary.
Does he believe it? I think he actually, 80 to 90% does believe his stuff. And I'll go further as to why he also probably believes it. He has been in the MLS bubble, indoctrinated by the American soccer system, indoctrinated by the monopoly, which is MLS, for decades. So he has been swallowing the narrative of the monopoly for decades. You become indoctrinated in the narratives that you spend most of your time around. It's inevitable. Your neurons, your neurophysiology becomes hardwired as a consequence of being pounded with the same narrative over and over and over again. In his case, it's basically MLS is the solution. MLS is the greatest thing to ever happen to soccer in this country. And the reason that we suck with the national team or aren't as good as we can be is because the youth system sucks and everything that outside of MLS is not good. Everything outside of MLS is the problem.
So can the same thing be said, Gary, for everybody else in the media, all these different guys, right? You have Donovan, Tim Howard, Hercules Gomez, Alexi Lalas. You feel that they've been, since they've been in the MLS system basically their entire life, they are kind of ignorant as to what the actual problem and what the solution would be. All of those guys fit in that category?
Yeah, supremely ignorant and to varying degrees, right? To varying degrees, but supremely ignorant. And let's not forget that all these guys clearly are still very engaged and active in the ecosystem and have a vested interest in the ecosystem. And if they want to continue having a high visibility platform and get the assistance of the establishment to perpetuate their voice and perpetuate their little cottage industry or little cottage businesses, they have to play ball with the establishment, which is the monopoly. So even if they do believe some of the things that are true, right? MLS is the root cause of all this disaster that we see at the youth, all the disaster, just everything. It is the root cause of it all is having a closed ecosystem. Even if they do believe some of that, are they going to voice it? No, they're not going to voice it. It's not going to come from them. You know who it's going to come from? It's going to come from people who stand on principle, who believe that principle is more important than their own, I don't want to say selfish motives because we all do it for selfish reasons. You know, even the principled person is doing it because they selfishly want to be there. That's who they are. But somebody like Eric Winalda comes out and says what he believes, irrespective of how it's going to impact him, apparently, because he has gone against the establishment and he has paid very heavy penalties and price for going against the establishment. And let me follow up by saying Eric Winalda, in contrast to Landon Donovan and Hercules Gomez and all of these Muppets, he does have experience across a whole bunch of the soccer subdomains. He has coached at the professional level. He has coached at the youth level. He has had media jobs. He has had, like, you name it, he's been involved in a lot of stuff. Most recently, as far as I've seen, he's even taken like a team, assembled a team and taken them to Europe, a youth team, and taken them to Europe. So he has some experience in that to boot. So he gets a lot more than these bozos. So there are exceptions to the rule. Brad Friedel was another one. When he was the New England Revolution's head coach, and people can trash him if they want. Oh, he was a terrible coach. Look at his record, Gary. That doesn't matter. First off, professional the win-loss record in MLS is just a beast all unto itself, another rabbit hole. That doesn't matter. What matters is that Brad Friedel actually spoke up a bit and spoke up against the monopoly and actually was one of the earliest ones in that sort of capacity to say, we need promotion relegation in this country. There's no pressure here. There's no pressure in MLS. And he paid the price. Has he coached in MLS since? No. But you take somebody, say, like the current Houston Dynamo coach. What's his name? Can you look that up really quick, Manny? What's the name of the Houston Dynamo coach? Who was also the DC United
Ben
coach?
Ben Olsen.
Ben Olsen, also shocking track record as a head coach in MLS from the very get-go. And they wouldn't fire him, and they wouldn't fire him, and they wouldn't fire him. And he keeps getting these gigs. Guess why? He's a good little boy to the league. Good little boy. And Bruce Arena's been a good company man for a very, very long time. And now, you know, they gifted him. They give him the San Jose Earthquakes gig. And yes, again, the people who only look at the superficial things in our audience or who come across us, they're like, oh, well, look, Bruce Arena is doing an amazing job with the San Jose Earthquakes. He's undefeated or whatever it is, Benny. You can look up the record. He's doing very well. Guys, do you not comprehend that in MLS, it's roulette? It's completely random. Who wins, who loses, it's all randomness. Because he was trash where he came from. And you look at Greg Vanney, 1 year he wins MLS Cup. Next year, dead last, one of the worst records in the entire league's history since 1996. From 1 year to the other. Total randomness. Oh, well, Gary, it's because Ricky Pooch got hurt. Doesn't matter. Okay, you lose one player, the whole thing goes to shit. Really? And now he sucks again. And guess what, Benny? It's so random. If he keeps his job, next year, Greg Vanney will win the MLS Cup, maybe. It's complete randomness.
Yeah.
So was my point? My point was lapdogs like Benny Olsen keep getting jobs. Eric Winalda, who actually speak the truth, don't get the jobs. And so we come full circle to Landon Donovan and Tim Howard and Hercules Gomez. They want to be good little boys.
Got it, Gary. So, Gary, we hear every year different versions of the state of U.S. soccer and what's going wrong with U.S. soccer. Alexi Lalas literally has a show called The State of the Union, okay? But we know that Alexi is kind of beholden to Fox and, you know, MLS and all that stuff. I want to hear from you, Gary. And again, I know the audience knows this, but I'm completely putting you on the spot here. I want to hear, what is your current state of the union of U.S. soccer? Everything good, everything bad? A lot of people like to point their fingers at different little problems that aren't the actual problem. So everybody knows Gary's not beholden to anybody, not to the league, not to U.S. soccer. So we know that what Gary's about to say is complete truth. He's not worried about losing a sponsor or losing his job. So I'm curious to hear, Gary, and I know the audience would be as well. Give us your current state of the union for U.S. soccer.
First, we have to be clear. By U.S. soccer, do you mean the federation, or by U.S. soccer, do you mean American soccer as a whole? Because people mix the two.
Right. Thank you for clarifying. Let's talk about American soccer as a whole.
Okay. American soccer as a whole. It's become worse. Frankly speaking, it's become worse. How so? I think we spoke about this with Jimmy Obleda quite a bit. And it's not that, you know, we're older now, we're in our 40s, and we look back to how it used to be, and we're like boomers now, and what was me? I wish it was back like the old days. It's currently just not competitive like it used to be. Competition has gone out the window. Everything has become monopolized, not just at the pro level, but at the youth level. It is monopolized. And I'll go further. Incidentally, I just ran into, I have to be careful here, a U.S. soccer official, okay? And they recognized me, came up, shook my hand. Man, Gary, you're like killing it. I watch all your Instagram reels. And he's like laughing. Guy is a U.S. soccer official, okay? Works for U.S. soccer. And he's like, I kind of asked him, you know, hey, how do you see things now? You know, and he's like, man, like, it's not about the sport anymore. It's literally not about the sport. It's literally completely corporate. It's literally all business suits running the show, bureaucrats, politicians. That's what it's all about. It's not about excellence on the field. In the least, all the meetings that exist are not really driven by that. It's driven by all the other stuff. Whether it be sponsorships, whether it be a relationship forming, relationship dynamics amongst different stakeholders or would-be stakeholders, those are the meetings. The sport is gone out the window. And it's kind of interesting because I'm like, well, man, look, whenever you leave U.S. soccer, come on the show, we'd like to talk. And they're like, absolutely, no problem at all. But so long as I'm here, I can't talk. And I'm like, I understand. And he's like, and as soon as I'm gone, I'm going to start liking a lot of your Instagram reels and posts and everything. But right now, I can't like anything. You know, people are going to see that I'm liking your stuff. And so that is an interesting signal that just happened that people can take away what the state of American soccer is currently. That's the state of American soccer. And if you want to get more into the weeds as to has like the national team improved, it has not improved. It's basically the same level as it was in 2002, which we got to the quarterfinals, mind you, or 98 or 94. And in 98, MLS had barely come on the scene. It's completely irrelevant. You can't attribute any success to MLS. 94, there was no MLS, and we did exceptionally well. And the players are of the same level now versus back then, relatively speaking, relative to their peers around the world. Then, in 94, 98, 2002, 2006, the national team was competing with all their international counterparts the same way that our current national team competes with all the other countries. So while the American player may have gotten better, the rest of the world has gotten better also. Everybody has gotten better around the world. So relative to our counterparts, we are the same. Nothing has changed.
What about our domestic league, Gary? Even without an open ecosystem, has it improved at all over the last 30 years? Or has it gotten worse?
No. I mean, it's basically the same. And people are saying, I'm just a hater. I'm not. I've been watching and studying MLS. I've seen more MLS games than everybody in our audience will ever watch. Almost certainly. I'm talking thousands of games that I've either attended personally or watched. That's a lot of freaking games over the years. So I'm intimately connected to the level. And has the team roster improved quality-wise versus the year 2000 or 2004? Maybe. It's marginal. But again, if you compare relative adjusted for everything improving in the world, it's the same goddamn thing.
Yeah. And Gary, Let me say that.
Can I say one more thing?
Please do.
It's the quality that really matters, okay, when it comes to relevance of the league or whether I would accept the league or whether other people who reject the league here, which is the vast majority of American soccer fans, reject MLS. It's not because it's not high level or the quality sucks. That's not the reason why. The reason we reject it is because we intrinsically sense and know, right? But it's we sense it. It's not a real competition. It's not legit. Every regular season game that you watch, you know there's nothing really on the line. And the players know there's nothing really on the line. And the institution knows there's nothing really on the line. So the whole thing is contaminated. The whole thing stinks. And emotionally, you don't get connected to that. Because if you're sophisticated as a soccer fan or practitioner or whatever, you can't connect to it. You see it's toxic. You see there's something wrong with it. So if it was extremely low quality, but it was an open ecosystem where everything freaking matters, now you can get attached to that because you sense the authenticity. You sense the high stakes game that's occurring every single week. So
what about
soccer? Yeah, no. State of American soccer in the dumpster.
What about back to the MLS, Gary? What about to the people that say, Gary, how can you say that it's not a competitive league when the players are professional players and they're getting paid and their performance on the field is directly going to correlate to whether or not they stay on the team, they get sold, they earn more money in the next season? So wouldn't those players be competing as hard as they humanly possibly could?
There's something already bad in the framing there, because there was a presumption of correlation between sporting performance and reward, you know, for the employee. And that's just not the case. If you look at it, I'll give you the most glaring data point, even though there's so many subtle ones that would take a long time to explain. The most glaring is when you have, say, a designated player, okay? So you could have a designated player that's making $3, $5, $7 million a season, And then another starter on the team who is a very important contributor to the team is making 150K or 200K or 300K. Now the 150K, 200K, that guy could be banging in goals like crazy, or could be a fundamental piece in the defensive midfield, or could be a fundamental piece as an outside back, or a fundamental piece as a center back who obviously don't show up in the score sheets or anything. You're not going to get designated player money. I don't care how good you are. And there are other incentives in the system, other things that are happening that are not based on sporting performance. So for instance, when the league, I'm going to keep repeating this because it's vital for people to understand. When in 2018 and 2019, a couple dozen, or I don't remember the exact number, but a lot of players, a huge number, unprecedented number of youth academy players said no to MLS contracts and went overseas, whether it be in Mexico, South America, or Europe. They did that because they weren't playing the kids. And they did that because homegrown contracts were a death sentence, as proven historically. When they did that, the league changed its policy. And all of a sudden, homegrown players were being played. 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds were thrown on the field. So that has nothing to do with sporting performance or sporting excellence. That is politics. That is public perception. That is public relations, okay, that these players were placed on the field. And when they were placed on the field, who are they displacing? They might be displacing a number of senior players who weren't homegrown players, who are better than the homegrown players. So you're playing players that shouldn't be playing. They're not good enough. Or when they sign homegrown players from their academy, because they have to show that the academy is working, right? Imagine you have an academy. Imagine you're the LA Galaxy. You have an academy. And every single year you're assessing, you know, the up and coming, the best 16, 17, 18, in your estimation, the best. And you're like, nah, they suck. They can't play in the first. There's just no way. They're terrible. So you don't sign anybody. And then the next year comes and you don't sign anybody. The next year comes, you don't sign. Imagine you go 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You don't sign any players to homegrown contracts. What signal does that send to the public, to the owners, to your immediate bosses? It's a terrible signal. So you know what they do? They just sign people, just assign them. That's not based on sporting merit or sporting excellence. They just sign them so that they can publish on their social media, new homegrown contract, and they take pictures with the kid and the kid's all happy and the family photo and all that. It's a signal to the rest of the academy and the players in the area, come join over here. Look, this could be you. But that kid wasn't capacitated to play first team football. No chance. And didn't even have the projection to play first team football. They'll do it anyway. That's not a sporting meritocracy. That's not competition, Benny. We're talking about competition. That's not competition. That's marketing. That's a completely different thing that they're doing.
Yeah. I'm going to play devil's advocate, Gary, just because I can already hear the comments incoming. You don't think this happens elsewhere around the world, that a Premier League team, let's say Everton, they're going to sign players from their youth academy every single year because they want players to know that, hey, if you come to Everton Youth Academy, you have the potential of making it to the first team. So you don't think this happens all around the world?
Not in the least remote degree to how it happens over here. Because I'll tell you what, Benny, even if they do sign a couple token players here or there, the first team has to survive the legit competition. They're not going to give charity minutes to kids who don't deserve to be there or players who aren't at the level just for public perception reasons. They need to survive. They cannot afford losing points and ultimately being in danger of relegation. They can't afford, depending on where you are on the table, they can't afford, if you're in the mid-table, doing this sort of stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, a few fixtures later, because you played players that don't belong, a few fixtures later, you're in 17th place or 18th place, or you're close to that relegation battle, when you didn't have to be close to the relegation battle. You could have been solidly mid-table the whole time, right, and be safe. You're not going to give charity minutes if you're a solid mid-table team that maybe could battle for sixth place or seventh place, or and maybe get a Conference League or a Europa League qualification at the end of the season. Or if you're battling for the title, or if you're battling for a Champions League spot, you're not giving charity minutes to nobody. If you suck, you suck. And if we paid $50 million for you to come over here to Chelsea, and we think that you don't have it, this other guy has it over you who it came for free, we're going to play the guy who came for free. They just won't do it, Ben. They won't do it.
So overseas, if a kid is getting on the field, it's because he's ready and he's going to actually contribute to the success of a team. And here it's more of a marketing ploy.
Or legitimately overseas, they believe that this particular player has the projection to develop and become something legitimate, okay, and become ultimately an asset to the club for sure. Because look, every kid who's 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, maybe even, at some point you have to be given an opportunity or a chance. And before you've been given that opportunity or chance, the probability is that somebody else who's more senior to you is probably more solid, right? And it's going to help the team get points more than you who has not had any experience. So a coach together with a club have to kind of judge the situation appropriately, size up the projection of the player, the potential of the player appropriately, and start bleeding them in, you know, little by little. But here, it doesn't matter. Throw them in, lose 3 points, 6 points, 9 points. Who gives a fuck? And for two reasons. At the end of the season, half the teams in MLS make the playoffs, and you can call it a successful season. So literally like 3 weeks before the end of the season, almost every team, even almost like the last place team, still mathematically has a chance to make the playoffs. So you could be sucking ass the entire goddamn season till the last 3 weeks and still maybe claw your way into the playoff picture. So give me a break, dude. Week 10 into MLS is completely meaningless. And taboo, if you happen to be one of the worst teams, you aren't getting relegated anyway. So it doesn't even fucking matter.
Yeah. This is a off topic, but it just came to my mind. What are your thoughts on the MLS, like the new playoff format, like a best of three series?
Retarded. It's so retarded. It's so bad.
I don't know why I just thought of that when you said MLS playoffs, and I'm just thinking like, what are we doing, man? Like we're literally acting like the NBA or fucking MLB or something. Like, guys, what's going on?
That's crazy. You have to understand that MLS, since it doesn't have authenticity, they have to constantly be coming up with gimmicks to raise some sort of excitement for that season. And so they just make up shit. You know, 1 year it's, we're signing Messi, so you get a big spike in interest, and then that spike decays, right, over time. It has a half-life. And the half-life, depending on what the gimmick is, the half-life could be, you know, half a season, or it could be a season and a half at maximum. And then when that fades, you have to come up with another gimmick to spike interest again, and then that's going to decay. And then another gimmick can spike interest, and then that decays again. Over and over and over again, it's just gimmick after gimmick after gimmick.
That's wild, bro. The next gimmick is going to be that the coach is allowed to sub himself in, and you're going to see all these crazy shit happening, bro.
Well, I would like to see a team anywhere in the world, but here, especially here, because you've got nothing to lose, have an AI coach. Just, you have the cameras, you know, the cameras are watching the game, and that's hooked up to a real-time hardware accelerated artificial intelligence that is fine-tuned to football, and it just has, you know, it's been trained, and then it makes all the decisions. Where to play the players, where to line them up, what substitutions to make, when to make the substitutions, everything.
That'd be wild, dude. Well, we'll see if maybe in the next, you know what I could see happening here is probably teams are already doing that and just like off the record, obviously, and they have some type of AI to help them break down film and, you know, analyze movement off the things like that, you know. So becoming an AI head coach, that's a little wild though, I think.
Why? I think it's great. And you know who are the players going to complain to when the changes are happening?
True. Very true. Gary, within your State of the Union, I know you didn't mention promotional relegation or having an open ecosystem. I know we've chatted on this a million times, but I think it still needs to be brought up and addressed until more people understand and people start pushing for this change. So again, I didn't prepare you. I know you didn't know what you're going to be saying, but maybe let's throw in a little bit more of the open ecosystem talk within the state of the of U.S. soccer or American soccer, as we talked
about. American soccer. Well, look, there's one really important slice of the discussion that needs to be spoken more about from our end as well, even though we've mentioned it, especially to combat, you know, what everybody always says, oh, the owners will never do it, right? Go to an open ecosystem. Guys, everybody understands this. They have a monopoly. A monopoly doesn't want to disrupt its monopoly. That's a dumb thing to talk about, okay? You can't apply the same logic to the youth system, because at the pro level, everybody says, Gary, it doesn't make any sense. You know, they paid $100 million, $200 million, $300 million, $500 million for a franchise, and you can't expect, you know, that investment to be put at risk. Okay, first and foremost, let's table that for a moment with the fact that it's retarded that you're protecting, you know, other people's investments like that when your own investments in the stock market, when your own investments in real estate, when your own investments in every facet of your life is not protected. Why are you protecting billionaires' assets? Put that aside though. When you zoom into the youth level, there is no $100, $200, $500 million investment to claim it needs to be protected. What are we doing here? Why don't we have an open ecosystem, promotion relegation at the youth level? Why aren't you all advocating for this? You all should be advocating for this hardcore, because that actually is quite impactful. If you have an open meritocracy at the youth level, that would drastically change the state of American soccer for the better. Because now all the youth clubs and every person in the youth clubs are incentivized to do good work, because there's actually a carrot, you know, at the end of the stick that is aligned with sporting excellence. You win, that means you're doing good work. Even if you disagree with the type of work that somebody's doing, even if you disagree that, oh, well, Gary, they're just recruiting the man children or something so that they can win and go up, fine. But you know what? Everybody's going out of their way with their own ideas of how to win and figuring it out, going 100% to become the best and not lose. And the cream will naturally rise to the top in those circumstances. Do you think Brian, with his most dominant team probably in the history of this country, okay, or among the history of this country, when he was at Barcelona, USA, and he started the academy there, and now it's called TFA, right? Those teams were winning the most prestigious tournaments in the United States easily every single day, and he did not have the man children. He demonstrated that you don't need the man children to completely dominate the other teams that do have the man children. That's incredible. We need to get that back, Benny. You can't have MLS Next be a closed walled garden where they only accept whoever they want to accept and kick out whoever they want to kick out. The incentives are all misaligned. So that is what we need, dude.
So Gary, how would an open ecosystem in the youth landscape, one, how would that look? And two, would MLS be a part of it? Is there a way to do it without using MLS? Because I think we all know that MLS wouldn't go for that, right? Because they would lose power. So how would we go about actually implementing this?
Well, it's the same as with the pro level. You need a turning point in the education of the public. If the public is educated enough to the point where they will constantly be attacking the establishment through all the channels, through the newspapers, through the media, through social media, through all their circles, if they're constantly attacking the establishment is kind of forced to tilt, right, and adapt and change. Because something else that occurs, Benny, is when there's such a massive amount of pressure on the monopoly or on the establishment to change, and if they still don't change, you know what happens? Some other people or group or person who is very wealthy and very powerful will see an opportunity in the marketplace, and they will enter the marketplace and build what the people are asking for in the marketplace. Such is the case for, say, like a USL. It's still all just words, but USL supposedly has been figuring out, okay, how are we going to go about giving the people what they want, which is promotion and relegation? And the only reason that they're even contemplating this, if it's legitimate, right, and they're actually going to do it, the only reason is because MLS is not doing it, and they clearly see that there's a critical mass of the public here who want that. And so they, as a business, are like going to be like, okay, there's a demand for that. We're going to give the people what they want because that'll help our business. So that's what we need, Benny. We need massive education and the demand from the public.
Yeah. I really like, Gary, what Rory said in the last episode. He said, whenever he's talking about this, that he tries not to use the words promotional relegation because it seems like that topic has become like such a taboo thing. And even, I feel like even a lot of people in my circle, like they know, yeah, hey, promotional relegation, we don't have it. We don't have an open ecosystem. I understand that that's a problem, but I'm a single coach in the system of a million people. Like, what am I going to do to change that? And I feel like a lot of people are thinking that way. It's like, what is one little guy from Wisconsin going to do about promotion relegation? You know, like there's nothing I can do. So I just have to exist in the ecosystem that I'm living in. I think a lot of people think that way, Gary.
Yeah. I think a good way to think about it, right, and have them or attempt to have them think about it is you can say, well, when there's a mutation in a cell and that mutation is a cancerous mutation, it's just one cell. And then in your body has a trillion cells. What's that one cell going to do, right? They can't affect the whole body. Nonsense. It's a mutation. It's cancerous. And when it divides, it becomes two. And when it divides again, it becomes four and then eight and then 16 and 32 and 64. So it's an exponential, right? Two to the n power. And only just a dozen generations later, which is not that much, you have a complete infestation, right, of cancer. And that's not to say that, don't tell them that they're cancer, right? It has to be the good side of it all. You understand? Maybe tell them you're a zygote, you know, and you're going to create a new life form. You, as an individual, can make a huge difference by just educating your immediate circle. Educate all of your parents as to, this is the reason why youth soccer is the way it is because there's no open ecosystem at the professional level. And this is why that is the cause of all of your ailments, parents. This is what's screwing over your children, parents. So every coach can educate 10 or 20 families a season, maybe. Or maybe you don't have the ear of all the families on your teams. So maybe you only get 5 families per team, but maybe you coach 2 teams, that's 10 families. So educate 10 families. And if you do a good job of educating them, those families will then spread the word to their circles, who will then spread the word to their circles. And just a few generations later, I'm not talking years, I'm talking about the spread of information. Next thing you know, you had this massive ripple effect all across the country. Millions of people now are fully aware of what is the root problem of our country. So that coach has a huge, huge impact that he can make.
Okay, so once all those generations are aware, what's the next actionable step to take? Is it boycotting MLS, boycotting the national team, like not going to the games?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't support the establishment. You opt out of the monopoly. You opt out. You're out. And look, if you happen to have a kid who, you know, wants to play at the highest youth levels or something, yeah, you shut your mouth or whatever and you have your kid go play MLS next. That's not a problem. That's fine. But eyes wide open for you. And then secondly, you can still educate everybody else about what's going on. You don't have to be public about it necessarily. Just speak in private. This is how things happen in Soviet Russia, right? You don't go blasting, you know, standing on a soapbox with a megaphone, you know, talking shit about the KGB. And no, you just silently behind closed doors, you look left, you look right, and you start talking your shit. And how are we going to launch a revolution?
So, Gary, even if all these generations did that, started boycotting, spreading the word, right? Would it even matter? Because at the end of the day, if you think about MLS's primary demographic and who they're targeting, right, their fan base, it's people that don't really care about soccer. Right? We've talked about this so many times on the podcast. They're targeting the people that want to come to the games and have a family night and enjoy eating a hot dog and popcorn. Like, those are the people that are keeping MLS alive right now. So even if millions of people are boycotting the league, is it going to matter? Is it going to make a difference, Gary?
Over the course of time, it will, man. It erodes your, it eats away at your business, man. If you extrapolate to how toxic it can become to a business, if 9 out of 10 people who are interested in the product that you sell, generally speaking, are talking massive shit about your product, even if you have a monopoly, it's really bad, Benny. It's really bad. They'll have to figure something out, man.
Yeah. Do you think, Gary, with literally just one of these guys in the media, like one former quote-unquote legend, Donovan, Dempsey, Tim Howard, one of them comes out and says, hey, here's the real problem. We don't have an open ecosystem. Do you think that would spark change in the country? Like, literally just one of the guys.
No, it won't spark change. It is a contributor to change. Because it gives fuel to the real fire. The real fire, the real key to the fire is what I just described. It's the common person. It's the people. It's the parents. It's the primary customers of the establishment. That is the real fire. So what would, like, I don't know, say a former high-profile men's national team guy comes out and says what you just said. Okay, all that does is it supplies ammunition, narrative ammunition, for the fire to spread maybe more violently or more sustainably, because it feeds you.
Right. Hopefully one or two or even more can come out and say that, bro. I mean, bro, like, to me, it bothers me that Donovan and Howard, like, their show, I brought this up before, their show is literally called Unfiltered, but there's a massive filter on it, bro. Massive filter that they're not going to come out and say, hey, here's the real issue, you know? Sad.
Yeah. It's, well, they grew up in an inauthentic, fraudulent soccer league.
Yeah. So for sure. That's all they've
known. That's who they are. It's kind of like you're the average of the five people you most hang out with. Who have they been hanging out with here in the American soccer ecosystem? The inauthentic, fraudulent, quote unquote, league, if you can even call it a league. So they themselves are inauthentic and fraudulent. And again, I'm not saying that they're liars. They believe a lot. I'm sure they believe a lot of what they're saying, but I'm also sure that they kind of know, right, that MLS is kind of harmful to everybody who is not MLS. You have to know that. You can't be that dumb to not understand that MLS wants to destroy and is harmful to all things not MLS, or can pose a harm or is competitive to MLS. They have to know that MLS is not good for USL. They have to know that they want to destroy USL clubs, that they have destroyed USL clubs. They have to know that they would rather have USL disappear from the face of the earth. They have to know that they would rather have all youth clubs completely controlled by the monopoly. And if you're not aligned with the monopoly, they'll destroy you. They have to know these. They can't be that dumb to not understand and see it.
Right. All these symptoms that people always point to, Gary, as being the fundamental problem, like pay to play, the coaching, right? Politics, badge chasing. How soon after, like, let's say the US were to implement an open ecosystem, okay? Do all these problems just suddenly disappear? Or how long does it take for the machine of promotion and relegation to start addressing some of these issues?
number one, it doesn't subtly disappear. And this is another straw man that imbeciles who want to protect the league use. They're like, oh, you're a promotion relegation idiot. You think that promotion relegation magically solves all the problems. First and foremost, no, nobody is saying that magically it solves all the problems. There's no magic associated with this. This is straight up fundamental economics, okay? In an open economic system, things flourish. There is a natural meritocracy. There is a natural competition for the consumer, which means you have to create the best possible product and be very attractive to the consumer. It's an organic process, okay? And to have a quality product, you need everything in your organization to be quality. A quality business person, a quality set of investors with deep pockets. You need, depending on the level, okay, that we're operating at, a quality sporting director, a quality general manager, a quality accountant, a quality lawyer, a quality coach, a quality assistant coach, a quality scouting department, a quality recruiter. Every single touch point needs to be operating at peak maximum efficiency and quality in order to be the most attractive, win at what it is that you're trying to win, and improve your business as a consequence. This is just fundamental economics, Benny, open economics. And if it's a closed ecosystem where one company runs the whole freaking show and it's all gatekeeper driven, there is no competition, no competition of ideas, no competition of anything. And so it is suboptimal to say the least. It's basically, do you want the United States of America and its founding principles, or do you want the Soviet Union? Because that's really what we're talking about. It's one or the other. Do you want the United States of America, or do you want North Korea? Because that's what we're dealing with here. It's not soccer specific. It's general. So how long does it take? And is it, first off, it's not magic. Secondly, how long does it take? Take some time. I don't know. 5 years? 7 years? Certainly not much longer than 10 years. Capitalism works very fast, Ben. And folks say, well, we do have capitalism, and that's the problem, Gary. No, we don't have capitalism here. We have crony capitalism. We have a captured regulator. One single company, one monopoly, has captured the regulator of the ecosystem, which happens to be the Federation. The Federation is the government. It's supposed to regulate the ecosystem. And what the government has effectively done, what the regulator has effectively done, is gifted one single company control over the whole ecosystem. Oh, Gary, that's not true. How do you explain USL? How do you explain ECNL at the youth level? How do you explain all these leagues? And yeah, but you know what's happened with the regulation is they have created a competition, true, but a competition between leagues instead of what football is supposed to be, which is a competition between independent clubs. The clubs are the single entity units that are supposed to be battling it out for supremacy, okay? And the way the ecosystem is regulated, they've completely destroyed that. That does not exist. And instead, what they've created is a competition between leagues. That's not football. That's not football. And worse than that, there isn't even a competition between leagues because the Federation has basically bestowed the crown to the winner league and cripples all the other leagues. They basically gave the crown to MLS at the first division level. All the other leagues can suck ass. They keep modifying the professional league standards so that other leagues can become first division. And they've also, and subsequently, in the most recent years, they've bestowed the crown of top league in the youth system to MLS, and everybody else can suck ass. So it's not even a competition between leagues either. They have crowned the winner and screwed over everybody else. So we don't have capitalism, Benny.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around how it's possible that the U.S. Soccer Federation has allowed this mafia to control everything for the past 30, 35 years. Like, what are the incentives of the U.S. Soccer Federation to allow MLS to stay in control the way that they have been for the last 30 years?
What has enabled that?
No, why would they even allow that to happen? Like, what are their incentives to say, like, yes, MLS, you are the single entity. Yeah. You are the main professional league.
Yeah. Well, U.S. soccer is governed and comprised of human beings, and human beings can be corrupted. So if you have a powerful entity, let's say like MLS in this case, and they're part of U.S. soccer, you know, by default, you're part of it. You're part of the governing body that is soccer, U.S. soccer. And if you're very powerful and you have a monopoly, you can explicitly or implicitly kind of communicate to the other individuals who have decision-making authority in U.S. soccer that, hey, you need to come along and be aligned with what MLS wants, or else what? Or else you're not going to survive, you're not going to have a livelihood in the top level of soccer in this country. So if you want to operate and have a job at the top level of soccer in this country, you have to align with the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is us, MLS. So you need to do our bidding. And so if anybody gets out of line, such as like a Eric Winalda, who was never really on the board of U.S. soccer, but wanted to become president and ran to become president of U.S. soccer, he doesn't get supported. You're out. And you don't get to work at the top level. Has Eric Winalda gotten an MLS job? No. Has Eric Winalda gotten a U.S. soccer youth national team or any sort of position whatsoever in U.S. soccer? No. And so they make examples out of people who don't align. And that's the implicit part of it all. Because now people who are at U.S. soccer, be it the general manager, the sporting director, the president, anybody whatsoever, they see how other people have been made an example of, and they're like, well, I'm not going to cross the line. I'm just going to do what MLS wants me to do. So they are captured, Benny, and they are captured because there's a monopoly at the top division. If it was not a monopoly, if it was comprised of all independent, legitimate clubs, like every team, right? Dallas, LA, New York, Houston, Portland, if they were all their own completely independent entities and not part of the single entity that is MLS, there is no monopoly, you see? So even if you piss off one party, it doesn't matter. There's dozens of other potential employers at the first division of American soccer. You can't be outright blackballed. So Man. Then the federation, the employees of the federation would not be scared. Then they would be able to do what they want to do. Because even if you piss off a Don Garber, you piss off an owner of a franchise or something, doesn't matter. Okay, so Don Garber, that owner of the franchise, will never hire me ever in my life. Fuck it. I can still go to New York, Dallas, Houston, Portland. I'm good.
Yeah, Gary, I have a feeling the next sporting director that we see get announced will have close ties to Don Garber or something like that, dude. You know, it's crazy, man. So basically, U.S. soccer is being held hostage by MLS, right? They can't speak out against anything, can't make any changes, or else simply they're not going to work at U.S. soccer anymore.
Yeah. And when they're not at U.S. soccer, not even U.S. soccer, U.S. soccer or MLS, you're out of top flight football in this country. You're out. You are out. You want a job in top flight football, you got to go overseas. Or you're going to have to land in USL.
Crazy, bro. All right, Cindy Parlokon, if you're in trouble, blink twice at your next press conference and we'll come save you.
No, but you see also, Benny, like I don't think they even see it. Some of them do see it, okay? But most of them don't even see it the way that I painted it because they have been indoctrinated in this system. They are one of them already.
Without even realizing,
they are one of them. They're like, Gary, what are you talking about? There's no conspiracy here. I don't feel threatened for my livelihood. Yeah, no shit, because you are one and the same with them. You believe what they believe, you see what they see, and you don't see everything else.
Yeah, that's insane, man. The same is true
of the reporters and journalists. They'll say, this Gary, you're crazy. Nobody has come to me and pressured me or told me I'll be out of the job if I don't, you know, peddle the MLS, you know, narrative or propaganda. This is all nonsense or whatever. MLS has never paid me a dime in my life. I work for somebody else. You know, Yeah, no shit. But the reason that you've got the job that you've got and you've got the access to MLS franchises and the players and to interview them and have, you know, all that. The reason you have that is because you have been aligned with their worldview. You believe that narrative. And so everything that you report, you write, you speak about is aligned with the monopoly because you are part of them. You see the world the same way they see it. And so, yeah, of course you never get any friction, significant friction coming from them. Of course you don't feel threatened that you're going to lose your job and not be able to be a journalist or reporter or be able to speak to, you know, the national team coach or MLS player.
Yeah. Let me end with this, Gary. I think it's a good way to wrap this up. It's a comment on your episode with Rory. And this guy says, both of you say all the right things, but you still participate in the ecosystem. You are part of the problem if you are participating in the ecosystem. Bystander society.
Well, this is a very interesting comment. Because we have to clarify a little bit by what do you mean by participating in the ecosystem? Well, Rory coaches in the ecosystem for sure. I don't. I have no job in the ecosystem aside from I have my own business in the ecosystem that is soccer. Okay. But I mean, if you want to lump that in with participating in the ecosystem. Okay, I guess I'm participating in the ecosystem, sure. I would say the following then, as it applies to me, is if this particular person is in the United States and born in the United States and disagrees with how the government is run in the United States or disagrees with the monetary system in the United States or disagrees with whatever happened fundamentally, structurally is wrong with the United States, well, get out. Because you're effectively telling me to get out. You're participating in the shit show that is the United States because you live here, because you spend money here, because you do everything here. You have a job here. You're communicating here. So basically, you're blaming me for something quite silly, in my opinion.
Got it. Yeah, it's basically the argument of if you don't like it, leave, right? You heard that a lot in the last election, right? If immigrants that are coming over, if you don't like the laws here or you don't like what Trump is saying, then just leave, you know? So I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what they're saying. It's just,
I mean, what other choice do you have though, right?
Well, yeah. Well, if you want to change the system, this is a whole other episode, Benny. Have you ever heard the expression, if you change comes from the inside, right? If you want to change the system, join the system and change. That is such a crock of shit. And everybody has bought that for decades, right? You want to change it, get into the system and change it. Well, you want to change government, get into government, go run for city council and change from the inside. Absolute nonsense. Once you are in the inside, you are subject to all the incentives of the inside. You are captured by the machine that already exists on the inside. And if you kind of go against the machine too much, the inside spits you out. So change comes from the outside, guys, outside of the system. Luckily, I'm not dependent on the system here. If soccer disappeared today in its entirety from American life as a whole, I'm fine. That tells you that I'm not dependent on the system. So, and I'm working outside of the system.
Yep. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you, Gary, is like, what is your current view of the state of the American soccer? Because I know that nothing's going to hold you back. I mean, you're going to say it as it is, which a lot of people won't do because they are beholden.
Yeah. That's the other criteria. Remember when people ask us regularly once in a while of, okay, how do I discern who I should listen to, who I shouldn't, what's a good coach, all that stuff. And we come up with some of the signals associated with it. Well, one great signal as to who to potentially listen to when it comes to media in the American soccer space is if the person is not tied, their livelihood is not tied to the ecosystem of soccer in this country. And this particular commenter lumped, you know, me and Rory together as us kind of, you know, being party to the problem, party to the system. Well, Rory is a medical doctor and his livelihood does not depend on soccer. So it's not a surprise that he's willing to say certain things, like he did say certain things, because what's the worst that can happen? My life doesn't depend on soccer. I'm good. So you have to look for people who are totally good and don't depend on the ecosystem and the power brokers in the ecosystem.
Yeah. And unfortunately, in the mainstream media, none of those exist. Right? They all have ties.
Exist.
They all have ties somewhere to where they can attack like the symptoms that we see. They can attack pay to play and youth soccer, but can never come out and say, no, hey, we need an open system, because then you're actually attacking MLS, you know? And that's a big no-no.
At the fundamental level, that's the other thing I should remark, is you'll see journalists once in a while, quote unquote, attack MLS. They'll say things like, oh, they should go to the international calendar. This is ruining things. Or, oh, they should play the kids. They're terrible at youth development. They've thrown those sorts of darts at the establishment, sure. But notice that all those darts don't hit the foundation of the enterprise itself. None of those things are foundational darts. They're all superficial darts. The league doesn't care. Oh, you want to criticize us on player development? Okay, that's fine. You know, you want to criticize us on whatever, you know, oh, we mismanaged the Galaxy, we're in last place. Okay, fine. You know, big fucking deal. But it's because it's all superficial, man.
Yeah.
I like to see journalists aim their rockets and darts and missiles at the foundational underpinning and structure that the league depends on, which is a monopoly.
Yep.
Never seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, Gary, this recent, you know, news flash with Donovan saying like the U.S. system is, youth system is fractured. Like, he hasn't just been saying this like recently. I mean, he was on Alexi Lala's show. And Alexi Lala's asked him straight up, like, hey, what's the best thing about U.S. soccer? Or what's the best thing about American soccer? What's the worst thing about American soccer? And before Donovan answers, he literally says, oh, well, I don't want to get in trouble here. You know, so the best thing is diversity and the worst thing is our fractured youth system, you know. And Alexi comes back. He's like, yeah, why would you get in trouble for that? Because he knows, right? I mean, you can say things like that without getting any pushback from the top.
Yeah, totally, man. Totally. One more thing, Ben, about the journalists, reporters, and media, because I know there's a lot of folks out there who are, quote unquote, independently reporting on American soccer, whether it be MLS or the national team or whatever. And their reaction would be, well, I don't work for ESPN or Fox or MLS or The Athletic or any media outlet whatsoever. I don't make a dime off of my reporting. And they'll think that they're independent. Okay, but sometimes you do things not for monetary reasons, you do things for attention. A lot of these independents out there, quote unquote independents, they want attention. They want attention. They want to build a big following. And so what do? You have a choice, right? And their choice is to be supportive of the establishment. Because if you're supportive of the establishment, guess what happens? The people who do have the big platforms, because they have been graced with a big platform by the establishment, those people might see you and they're like, oh, you know what? This guy's a cool guy. Let me, retweet what he just posted. Or let me have him on our podcast platform because he's aligned. I agree with what he's saying. Versus if you come out as an independent and you attack the foundation of the establishment, guess what? The guys with the big legacy distribution channels aren't going to invite you to their platforms, aren't going to retweet you, aren't going to support what it is that you're saying. So it's a much harder thing to build a large following by being anti-establishment.
Right. And even more than the attention, Gary, like, just think about the access of like an independent journalist, right? If you're coming out negatively against MLS, you're not going to be given opportunities to interview players or interview coaches or be in the media room after the game. So you have to kind of be on their side of MLS. Otherwise, nothing for you to report on. You can report on it, but you're going to be standing outside the stadium. If you want to actually be in the weeds, you better fucking be supporting MLS, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Be a little lapdog. And what's more is that's especially true when you have no talent of your own. When you have no talent of your own, no, I'm serious. When you have no talent of your own, no skill of your own, no deep subject matter expertise of your own, what are you going to do? You have no choice.
Yeah, you have to. All right, Gary, listen. So, what did you say?
So that's the class. That's the class of people that we have going into that profession. You've got no skills.
Yeah.
And look, they're a little upset because the AI revolution is building up steam and they've already got kind of like some reporters are getting fired and being replaced with AI and stuff. And there's this little backlash. Yeah. Go develop some actual real life skills. Go build something real in the world.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you saw like the new ChatGPT update for photos. You can do like a mean ass like player graphic, right? Like, for example, like somebody made like a fake one of like Haaland signing to Barca, but it's like a badass graphic, bro. And then you see in all the comments, like all of the graphic designers, like, oh, like this looks like trash or like it's never going to work. But everybody else is commenting like, bro, this is fucking amazing, dude. And it looks legit, dude. You know, it really does.
Yeah.
It's crazy the advancements that are coming.
No, yeah. Hopefully some reporters or journalists out there take it to heart and maybe realize that the only way that their profession kind of survives to any degree or they will survive to any degree is if what they are saying is actually valuable, right? And actually meaningful and actually deep. And the only way you're going to do that is change the way that you currently operate. Because right now, the way that you've been operating is completely superficial. You offer no insight, really.
So, Gary, what did you say? The state of American soccer is, what was your phrase? Garbage? Trash?
That's the first word that came to my mind is trash.
There you go. All right. You heard it, guys. State of American soccer, trash.
Hey, some people like trash. There's a lot of alley cats that jump in trash and they love it. So learn to love the trash.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player.